Welcome to the She Negotiates podcast, where we help you claim your value, earn your worth, and smash glass ceilings. Each episode will feature an in-depth interview with an expert on how to negotiate with your doctor, your employer, your children's school, and of course, your family. Tune in to hear great stories and get actionable advice with your host, Victoria Pinchon.
Jordan, good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
It's going great. Yeah, everything's good. So today we have Jordan Sale on the podcast. She's the founder of 81 Cents. And I'll tell you what 81 Cents says it does. And you will learn how successfully it does it. 81 Cents helps women and underrepresented minorities make sure they're being paid market rates by getting them personalized market data, compensation feedback, and career advice from hiring managers and recruiters in their field. Now, I'm going to, I have to tell you that the first time I saw 81 Cents, I got really excited because market data is what I'm all about, and it was not easy to find. But then I found that 81 Cents didn't just provide market data, it also provided negotiation advice, and it provided current market data based on both what it provides in writing to its clients, but also what individuals who are in the industries that these women are applying for jobs, what they're paying now. So I think you can't get anything like that anywhere else. So Jordan, at a very young age, you founded 81 Cents. Tell us about how you got that great inspiration, and maybe give our audience just a little bit idea about your educational background and what you were doing at the time of you founded this organization.
Definitely, and thanks for having me on, Vicky. It's cool. We've known each other for, I think, almost 2 years at this point, and so it's kind of fun to think back where we were a few years ago and how far 81 Cents has come since then. But I started 81 Cents in the summer of 2018. But really, my sort of negotiation story started with my very first job out of undergrad. I have this uncle, Dennis, and he's sort of been my like career Sherpa throughout my career. And I feel very, very lucky to have him in my life. And I remember when I got my first job, I had interned at the company and then they gave me an offer to come back. And I called my uncle and I said, "Oh my gosh, I got a job. Someone wants to pay me. Like, this is amazing." And, you know, he was excited and goes, "Okay, let's talk about the offer. What they offer and what are you going to counter with?" And I was like, "What do you mean? I've never had a full-time job before. I can't counter. They're, you know, they want to pay me to do work. Like, I've never had a full-time job before." And of course, he explained that this isn't the way the world works. You have to go out and ask for, you know, what you're worth. You just can't like expect that the company or organization or whomever it is going to kind of take care of you and that everyone is negotiating. And I just remember being shocked. Like, I've just finished undergrad. I've just finished all of this schooling. And you're telling me that there's like this whole thing about the way the world works that I didn't know about. And it was just kind of shocking. But I took his advice. I negotiated. The company was not surprised at all. And they offered me, I think they came back and it was like $3,000 or $4,000 more, which like as a percentage of what I was earning at the time, actually was pretty good. And I remember that they also shared that they were going to raise, I was sort of joining in like an entry-level analyst sort of role. So there were a few of us taking that position. And they also shared that they were going to raise it for the other people who were taking that position too.
Oh, good for you. You started your first negotiation. You helped other women get more money.
Okay. Yeah. I remember when I tell people that sometimes they're like, "What do you mean? They should have given you all that money instead of the other people." But that's not how I felt about it. I thought it was really cool. And I felt lucky that, you know, someone was looking out for me and then I was able to help others too.
Yeah, that's great. So, okay. So that's the beginning of your negotiation story. I've never heard that story. What's your uncle's name?
Dennis.
Kudos, Dennis. Wow. What a great uncle Sherpa you have.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, fast forward a couple of years, I have some more negotiations. Not all of them go as well as that. I remember always feeling very uncomfortable with the process, very guilty for asking for more money, just sort of ashamed, uncomfortable with it. And after one particularly bad negotiation, I sort of promised myself, like, I'll never go in that unprepared again. Like, there has to be a better way to do this. And if it's true what Dennis says, that everyone really is negotiating, then, like, why is it so hard for me to do it? And I just sort of sat with that idea for a while. I started reading books about negotiating. I started talking to people who I thought were good at it. And then a couple of years later, I was in grad school at the time and had a little bit more time and space to think. And it sort of just struck me, like, there's got to be a better way for this. I think I had just gotten off the phone with a friend who's super smart, super capable, underrepresented in sort of the work that she's doing. And she was just so nervous about asking for more money. And I understood where she was coming from, but also from where I stood, I was like, what do you mean you're nervous? You're so capable. And they keep telling you how awesome you're doing. Like, why is this such a big deal? And then at that moment, that was sort of when I decided, like, I want to do something about it.
That's it. I love that. I love origin stories. So you were in, you were getting your MBA at the Berkeley Haas, yep. It's Haas, H-A-A-S, right? Haas, yep. School of Business. And so you made this decision. Listen, there's so few. Do you know the percentage of women who have started up companies? What percentage get venture capital?
Ooh, it's very low. At this point, it's probably close to 20%, but definitely less than that.
Oh, wow. That's good, because last I looked, it was 3%.
Yes.
So your generation is doing it.
Yep. Well, we have a long way to go. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting starting it at that time. There were quite a few people in my class who were also working on new company ideas. The majority were, you know, identified as men, but there were a few women in the bunch. And we sort of bonded together to say, like, all right, we know the odds are stacked against us here. And we know this is hard to do, regardless of who you are and what your background is. But we also know that we have all of these resources ahead of us. And there is this shifting tide. And there is interest from the world in more, you know, female-founded companies, or even just mission-oriented companies. And so it was an exciting time to do it, an exciting place to be. But at that point, I just knew that I wanted to start something in this space. I didn't know what it was going to be, what it was called, right. Anything like that.
So how did you, I'm interested, because it sounds like, you know, your major concern, which is, I have to tell you, my major concern in consulting with women, all of whom feel uncomfortable negotiating, no matter how much money they're making, how smart they are, how many degrees they have, which is often a lot, they all feel uncomfortable. So how big a role did that play? And was there something about the business plan that I assume you drew up that addressed not only the market data you were going to access, but also the problem with women not being able to ask?
Definitely. So the advice I was given at the time was just start. Get out there, start talking to people, bring in new ideas and new perspectives. And so I took that very literally, and I started posting in Facebook groups of women who worked in tech in the Bay Area, because that's where I was living right now. And I just said, hey, I'm interested in helping people negotiate their salaries. I want to help, but I have no professional training in this. I'm not sure how I'll be able to help, but if you want a sounding board, if you want someone to talk it through with, if you want someone to go out and do research for you, let me know.
Wow.
I posted in a couple of groups, and I was just totally overwhelmed by responses. Like, I think I probably got, you know, maybe 50 responses the first day, and then like a couple hundred over a couple of weeks. And I mean, it was just, it was incredibly validating, because there were so many people who had so many questions. And the first thing I noticed was that this weren't just people earlier in their career. I mean, I was talking with like VPs of product who had like 15, 20 years of experience, engineers who had PhDs and were working at big tech companies like Apple and Google. I mean, people were incredibly, incredibly impressive and accomplished. And it was just sort of mind-blowing that even they felt really nervous and felt really insecure about this. But so it was through that sort of informal coaching and supporting people that I learned a lot more about the problem. And that's where I had the insight that it's not just confidence that makes this hard. It's the lack of data. And it's not just the lack of data that makes this hard. It's also confidence. And I learned that the two are pretty closely intertwined. Like, of course, you can do things to become confident without having any sense of numbers. And of course, you can get numbers and still not feel confident. But they tend to go together pretty well. Because for women in particular, you know, the stat about how we tend to apply to jobs where we meet, you know, 90 or 100% of the requirements, but men will apply to jobs where they meet like 40 or 50%. The same thing holds true in so many other areas of our life, including negotiation. So if we have numbers and if we have this amazing case to kind of back up why we should earn more money, then we will feel more confident. And so that's where I realized that we can play a really important role in helping people build that case. And then the question became, well, where does the data come from? And what is the best way to help someone like build their argument? And then that's where I sort of went into the wisdom of the crowd idea.
So so you can see why I was so excited to find you. You're doing exactly the same thing I am. And it's so interesting to me, the first story about helping the other women. Is that one of the first things my husband said when I said, oh, I found this great site. It's 81cents.com. This young woman from Berkeley founded it. And, you know, I don't know, I emailed you or something and said, hi, I'm Vicki Pinchon. I want to meet you. And so Steve, my husband's first reaction was, isn't she going to cut into your business? I said, there is so much business there. That's part of it. And the other part of it is there really isn't a woman doing this work who is cutting into my business. And if she cuts into my business, that's great. You know, it's a, what do they call it? It's a generous circle. It's I can't remember anyway, but it really is a circle of benefit that circulates around it. I certainly found that with you. So, okay, so what's the next step? Is it writing a business plan? Is it seeing whether or not you know people who might give you what they call angel money to invest? Give us an idea, because this is something most women in business I know are pretty darn interested in.
Yep. So now it's the end of summer 2018. I know there's a problem. I've done a bunch of random coaching, and I've had probably 60 phone calls with people over the course of the summer. Some people have gotten big raises and I didn't do anything to help them. You know, we just talked about it and other people haven't, but I'm learning something kind of at every step. I remember someone like over the course of that summer, they sent me 2 bottles of wine as a thank you. People are Venmoing me. And it's just, yeah, it's super interesting. And so now I have sort of this idea, which is that I think you can go out and you can ask people to give each other advice, because companies have all of this data, and companies, very few people know this, but they share data with each other, and that's how they figure out what to pay you. So why don't employees do that? Why don't we informally unionize employees and have them share data across each other? And of course, that's what sites like Glassdoor are trying to do, but it's not in a personalized way where someone's coming and saying, hey, I need help, and then you see yourself in that person and you jump in to help them. And so I wanted it to feel like this network or this sort of community where people are excited to help each other. And so I had this idea. And so I just started doing it. I took a class called Hands-On Rapid Prototyping, and I hated the class. They made us move so quickly. And I was so attached to my idea and I thought it was precious. And so therefore I didn't want to test it because I was sort of scared of learning that maybe it wouldn't work. But to the credit of this professor, he just pushed us really hard. And so within a couple of weeks, I had done a bunch of kind of tests of it. And the first thing I did was I basically created a fake candidate who I called, you know, Jane Doe or something like that. I wrote a fake profile. Here's what she makes. Here's what her job is. Here's, you know, her new offer, the details of that. I made a survey that was like, is she being paid fairly? If no, is it, you know, what should she be earning instead? And what would you do if you were in her position? And then I just went on LinkedIn and I found people in my network who had that role. And I just messaged them saying, hey, you know, someone I know is negotiating and they're struggling to figure out what to do. Would you take 5 minutes and give them feedback? And I got a ton of responses. And a lot of people were super confused. They were like, what? Who is Jane Doe? And what is this? But a lot of people thought, oh, wow, this is super interesting. Not only do I feel good that I'm helping this person, but it's interesting to see what they're being paid. And so that was really how it started. Like, I just kind of started doing it. And then the business plan and the business model all came sort of later. But first, I wanted to kind of convince myself that there was a need for this and that people really would help.
I love that. I remember asking you early on, you said you had a lot of men on the panel, and we'll talk more about what that means. But, and I said to you, like, why do so many men volunteer their time? And you said to me, what?
I think I probably said that, you know, if you are sort of a man in a very senior role, despite there being a multitude of ways that you can help and you can participate in the conversation and you can really drive equity in your workplace, you may not perceive it that way. And so we've gotten tons of feedback that this is something really tangible. It's really easy. It's really interesting. And it's a clear way to say, like, I have knowledge that not everyone has. And so I'm going to pass it on in a way that is directly beneficial and helpful and supportive.
Yes, much longer answer now and a better one. What you said to me is, men don't know what to do to help close the page gap for women, and they really want to do it, and this is an easy way for them to do it. And I thought that was really inspirational to me, that, you know, just that little piece that there were a lot of men out there who really were concerned about the pay gap. And they really did want to do something, and so much so that they'd volunteer to do something. You keep saying it's easy, and it never looks easy to me to give the advice that these people do. So, okay, first angel round.
So that was a big, you know, question for me. And I was living in the Bay Area at the time. And so everyone is just chattering about venture capital. And are you going to raise or are you not going to raise? And are you a unicorn today or are you going to be a unicorn tomorrow? And it's just sort of the ethos up there. And so, of course, I started to drink the Kool-Aid and, you know, started to meet with some investors. But the more I had those conversations, the more it just didn't feel right to me. It felt like, and maybe I was just meeting with the wrong investors, but, you know, it just felt like people were so concerned about, how are you going to monetize this? How are you going to make a ton of money here? When are you going to raise your prices? I remember one investor I talked to, he told me, because we're focused, you know, on women and historically excluded racial minorities for the most part. And he told me, he was like, I just don't understand why you're narrowing your market. You know, everyone needs this service. Everyone wants this kind of information. Why are you kind of cutting your market almost in half? And I mean, I just thought that was wild, because one, every good founder knows that the narrower your kind of customer segment is, the better you will end up doing and the more value you'll be able to provide. But second, narrowing my market, like, we're still serving like 60 to 70% of the global population. I mean, I just thought that was so tone deaf. And I just didn't find a lot of investors out there who really got it. And I also think, you know, this is where imposter syndrome came in, where I really liked kind of the pace we were moving at and being able to kind of control and choose our own destiny. And I just could feel that as soon as we took outside investment, I would start to lose control of that. And maybe that would be great, but also maybe that means that we wouldn't exist in a few years because we would have burnt out or, you know, not lived up to our valuation or something like that. So I took the path of raising as much non-dilutive capital as I could, which meant basically...
Explain that for our listeners.
Yeah, totally. So I wanted to take capital that wouldn't give away ownership of the company. And so as a female founder, as a student founder, and as a first-time founder, there was a lot of resources out there for that. And so we were basically able to raise, and I mean, this is where my kind of privilege and network become very obvious, but we were able to raise probably close to 80 or 90K in non-dilutive funding to get the company off the ground. And so there were a bunch of different grants and scholarships and things like that. At one point, we took a loan that was basically like a zero interest loan that we just would pay back a little bit every month. And we're actually still paying that back. But yeah, there were a lot of people who wanted to support what we were doing, and a lot of people knew like this could be something, and the world needs and wants something like this. And so if we can, you know, help this founder who has no clue what she's doing do it a little better or do it for a little longer, then, you know, that would be a good thing.
So interesting. One of the things that draws me toward what you just said is networking, and that you said, you know, I might have been in a privileged position, but I had this great network. And talk a little bit about that network, because I talk to women beginning businesses about the critical nature and the ease that I've found networking with strangers. But you had a ready built network. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even the first example I shared of I made up this fake profile and I just went on LinkedIn and I messaged people who were doing that role. Like, my network of product managers in the Bay Area was already big enough that I had people to give feedback on that initial pay. I think, you know, our first couple hundred pay equity advisors on the platform were all people that I had either worked with previously, knew from business school, knew from undergrad, or had just kind of connected with somewhere along the way. And so there was a lot of support from my network in helping to get this off the ground. And then the amazing thing is we were also building a network. And so now the 81 Cents network is so much bigger than my own network, so much bigger than just any one person. And it's just amazing to kind of go out into the world and find people who know about what we're doing. One of my friends sent me a message the other day. He was at a random CVS somewhere in, I don't know, not the city that I live in. And he overheard two people in the aisle talking about 81 cents. I mean, this thing is, you know, it's now bigger than any one person in any one network, which is just so cool.
That's great. So let's cut to the chase and hear about how that business structure turned out, what it is 81 cents is doing, how they access 81 cents, and what the nature of the information that you're providing is.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, the problem we set out to solve was that it's really hard to figure out if you're being paid fairly. And that the reason why it's so important to know is because, one, every negotiation you have, every recruiter you talk to will want to know what you want to be paid. And oftentimes, if you say numbers that are too low, or if you don't have a sense, you'll just basically end up selling yourself short. So it's super critical for actually figuring out, you know, what you're supposed to be paid, and then going out and getting that. But as we talked about, it's super important for also just feeling confident that you deserve to be paid fairly and that you deserve to make, you know, really solid living wage. And I mean, so many people have so much emotional history with money that becomes very complicated. And so if we can take a little bit of that out of the equation and just say, here's the number, 10 people feel that you should be paid this much, now go and get it, it just makes it that much simpler for folks. So basically, the way the product works is a candidate will come to us when they have a new offer, when they have an annual review coming up, or if they just want to know if they're being paid fairly. They submit their data to our platform, and then we anonymize it and we send it out to a network of, at this point, it's about 2,000 hiring managers, recruiters, really senior professionals in tech. And they basically score the offer and say, you know, this is fair, this is not fair, here's some relevant data points. If I were in your shoes, here's what I would do. It's very actually similar to the original vision that I had, but it just works so much better now. And so within typically 48 hours, we will turn around a report. We call them market value reports, and they basically have perspectives from somewhere between 5 and 10 advisors who are in your same field, doing the work you're doing or have been doing it previously or recruiting for that field. And so you're basically moving beyond like going out and getting, you know, one perspective or two perspectives, but you're really getting a pulse on like, here's what the market thinks and here's, you know, where you have opportunity to improve your pay. And this is super important for folks because, you know, depending on like the kind of network you have, it may be really easy to get that kind of data. But for most people, especially historically excluded folks, they may not have a network in the field they're trying to enter. They may not have experience, you know, asking people to talk about money is very uncomfortable. And so we go out and we have those hard conversations for people. And we really go out and we get sort of a pulse on, here's where you should be. Here's how far below you are. And here's what to do to close the gap.
Yeah. After I send my clients to 81 cents and they come back, I often ask them, well, do you have a network? I mean, because these are a lot of people who, I send a lot of people to 81 cents who are seeking promotions and raises. So it's not just what entry pay would be. See, so you're at Google in some kind of product development. Don't you help, like, can't you ask people? And almost everybody says, no. You know, it would be too uncomfortable. I don't want to. I'd rather have a general idea. Sometimes they'll say, I have somebody senior to me. I might be able to ask them. But yeah, your point that people don't feel comfortable using their network to talk about money is one of the big problems and one of the problems that 81 cents solves. So how's 81 cents doing? How are your clients doing?
We're doing well. We're the busiest we've ever been, which is awesome. I mean, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, like many businesses, ours totally froze. You know, everyone was, hiring was frozen. And if you did have a new offer, you were scared to negotiate it because everything was so fragile. What if it went away? What if they rescinded it? Now we are very much back, which is really, really exciting. We are about to hit our 700th candidate supported. On average, candidates are seeing 17% increases in pay.
That's amazing.
I think in the next few months, we'll hit $5 million in additional comp negotiated.
That's, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's 17%. That's almost the wage gap. You're close.
That is almost the wage gap, depending on who you are and what race you are.
Yeah. Well, yes. Let's talk about that issue. I know that 81 cents has always been concerned with underrepresented minorities. I have to say that my concern for what I might be able to contribute got rocket fuel from the George Floyd murder in the middle of 2020. But I've noticed like more emphasis in your marketing materials, in your email. So tell me a little bit about the underrepresented minority kind of mission of your organization.
Absolutely. So at the beginning of 2020, pre-pandemic, so wild, we looked at all of our numbers. We had basically just wrapped up our first year of kind of full operations. And we looked at our numbers and we realized that we were skewing our support towards white women. And it made sense. I am a white woman. As I mentioned, so much of the early work we did was kind of tapping into my own network. But we sort of knew right there that that was going to be a problem because we aren't here to exacerbate, you know, wage gaps. We wanted to make sure that our support was very, very representative. And so at that point, we decided we want to totally flip these numbers for 2020. And we think the way to do that is through partnerships. We don't think there are a ton of people out in the community doing really important work and supporting different groups, particularly of women of color. And so let's go out and let's find those organizations and see how we can support them and see if there's a role for 81 cents to play there. And so, I mean, I'm super grateful that, you know, we had that very hard but candid conversation as a team at that time. And it's totally transformed the way we think about our work and sort of our mission. This isn't just about gender. This is a very much an intersectional problem. And white women experience negotiations very differently than Asian women, who experience it very differently than Black women or Brown women or Native American women. And so there's a lot of nuance there. And I think that while I still hold that this model of going out and collecting feedback from people who are actually in the world doing this kind of work is helpful for everyone, certainly different groups and different identity groups experience the problem in a different way. And so that's something that we've tried to be really sensitive to. And, you know, you mentioned earlier that so many of the advisors who are kind of volunteering through our platform and sharing data and giving negotiation advice are men. And that's been something that we've had to think a lot about too. Like, you know, we have sort of the perspective that we want to take as much information from the top in roles that are often held by white men. And we want to bring that down the ladder and we want to make sure that everyone else has access to it. However, as a result, white men often don't understand what it's like to negotiate as a Black woman. How could they? It's just a very different lived experience. And so as we move along, we are starting to think more about like, how do we bring in information from people who look very different than you? And then how do we bring in information and support from people who may look like you, because they will understand how do you navigate the system from this particular sort of identity group.
Oh, I didn't know you were doing that. I like that. That's yeah, I'm so glad. My life of feminism and activism, to the extent that I didn't totally sell out to the corporate practice flaw, it feels like the future is in good hands. You know, there are a lot of challenges today, for instance, for women in the country, but also the number of women who are out supporting women and who have used really 2020 a lot to broaden our concerns is just so encouraging. So how are you? So you said you were forming partnerships. So how are you serving underrepresented communities now?
Definitely. So we have partnerships with probably 10 different organizations that specifically support Black and Brown women, which is awesome. And I mean, the leaders of these organizations are amazing and have just really pushed us, I think, to think about how are we going to show up for these sort of communities, and how are we going to not just say that we care about this cause, but actually do something about it. And so with that in mind, at the beginning of 2021, we launched a scholarship program. So I don't think we've talked about the pricing of 81 cents, but right now, if you want us to run a market value report for you, it costs just under $200. And so at the beginning of 2021, we launched a scholarship program to basically support women, particularly women of color, for whom 81 cents support might be cost prohibitive. And so that's been amazing. Our goal for our first year was that we wanted to support 81 candidates. However, we are just about, we're probably at 70 or so right now. So we're definitely going to kind of beat our 2021 goal. And so now we've shifted and we think we'll be able to hit, you know, support 125, 150 women this year, and then continue to build it out in years to come.
That's
so
great.
I think that's been a really important piece for us. And I mean, we've been, you know, not surprised to see one, like how much demand there is for the work that we're doing, specifically from women of color, but also how much support we've also found from our community to support getting a scholarship program off the ground and to help us fund it and make it possible.
Yeah, and you have also supported a very tiny industry of which I am a part, which is women negotiation consultants and coaches. I know that a lot of them are working with you, and many of them are providing 81 cents reports as part of the services that they provide. And I know at least one woman of color who's doing that work along with 81 cents, Stephanie Heath, who's great negotiation coach. And women listening to the podcast who are thinking, you know, I'd love to talk to maybe Jordan or Vicky, but I'd feel a lot more comfortable if I was talking to someone who had my cultural experience. My website has a list of allies on it, most of them women of color who are doing the same kind of work I am or the identical work that I'm doing. And because 81 cents started giving away scholarships, I did too. So thank you. Also, so you also refer women out, I think, on your wiki. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your wiki, and then just kind of take a look at the future. But just tell us how the wiki works. I was also excited to see that.
Yes. So probably a bit over a year ago, we launched a resource library, and we felt like we've learned so much over, you know, the 3 years that we've been building 81 cents. And we wanted to share that with people, regardless of whether they could afford our services or not, or regardless of whether our services made sense for them or not. You know, not everyone wants or feels that they need sort of this deep dive into their pay and levers to optimize it. But some people just, you know, want a script or a template ahead of their negotiation or something like that. And so we basically took everything we learned and put it in this resource library, which has been really awesome. And sort of my vision for the resource library is that it'll be something that we continue to add to over time, that our community and our pay equity advisors continue to add to, and that it just sort of becomes this living, breathing resource for kind of all things negotiation. And one of the things that we've worked on in that is specifically, you know, how should you think about negotiating differently if you are a woman of color or if you are part of a certain identity group? And how is the calculation different? Because it is.
Great. Great. So let's take a look into the future. What are your hopes? And would you like to see yourself put 81 cents out of business because everyone's being paid equally?
Great questions. So, you know, the first few years of building the company and getting it off the ground, it was not clear to me that we would be around a year later. I always really struggled with, you know, what's the 3-year vision? What's the 10-year vision? Because it just wasn't obvious to me that we would make it. You know, every day, every week was just so touch and go. Now I can say with a great deal of confidence, we will be around in 5 years. We will be around in 10 years. And as exciting that is to me, because it means that we have a model that's sustainable. We have, you know, systems and processes and things in place to make sure that we'll get to that place. It also means that the problem is going to continue to exist. I mean, you know, I'm so proud of us for, you know, helping women find $1 million more dollars than $2 million, $3 million, $4 million, gonna hit $5 million soon. You know, all of that is super exciting, but the wage gap is trillions of dollars, and we are taking a very grassroots, very small, very kind of bottoms up approach to closing the gap. And my real belief is that I don't think that things are gonna change until we start to see top-down reform as well. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that in 5 or 10 years from now, in addition to working directly with candidates like we do today, we will also be working with policymakers. We will be working with companies. We will be working hard to kind of change the fabric of how work is offered and negotiated and decided on, because I think that's sort of fundamentally flawed.
Yeah. And you're optimistic about that.
I am I'm cautiously optimistic. I think to do this work, you have to be optimistic. And I mean, if I spend too long thinking about kind of the state of the world, it's very easy to get pessimistic. But what brings me back to optimism is the candidates that we support. So hearing the stories of kind of what happens after someone gets an 81 cents market value report, what they go out and do, and then how they often come right back and try to pay it forward by becoming a member of our advisor community or by donating into our scholarship fund. Those are the things that give me hope, because right. I do know that this small but mighty network we've built is very altruistic, very caring, very competent, very capable. And so the thought of growing that and scaling that does give me a lot of hope for the future.
So my only request is, one I've made many times, get more lawyers on your panel.
Yes.
When a lawyer, I am a lawyer, not practicing anymore, but of course that's a population that comes to me, and I'm always disappointed that I can't provide the 81 cent service to most of them. Sometimes you have inside counsel advice, and that's been helpful. So Jordan, I want to thank you so much for coming here. More importantly, I want to thank you for doing the work that you're doing and for doing it in such an enlightened manner without a lot of fanfare, right? Without a lot of self-congratulation. You're doing really work that's going to change. You are doing work that's going to change the world. And that's exciting to me. And I think all it takes is persistence and optimism. And you have lots of that. So tell everyone how they can reach you and how they can find that wiki.
Yeah, absolutely. So everything is on our website, 81cents.com. We love hearing from people who've used our resources, people who've looked at them and have decided they're not for them. We're actually starting to think about new products. So in addition to the market value report, how can we provide more support, more access, faster support, faster data, all of that? And so would love thoughts and feedback from your community and your listeners on what else folks want to see.
That's great. So please do put me out of business. I need to retire.
I'm working on it.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
That's it for this episode of She Negotiates. If you liked it, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and please leave us a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much for listening, and until next time, remember, the world needs what you have to offer. All you have to do is ask.